Welcome to part four of Bob Crew, the Master and the Music.
Stevens and the sun, but the stars we could reach were just starfish on the beach.
In the May 5th, 1973 issue of Billboard magazine, there's a 32-page salute to the man I am about to introduce. I am honored to present a gentleman who has written over 2,000 songs, including the one you just heard a sample of, recorded approximately 200 albums, 63 of them are either gold or platinum, and they include popular music, spoken word poetry, TV and film soundtracks, and even classical music. His songs have accounted for the sale of over 100 million records. He's written about 70 books. Is that accurate, Mr. Rod McCune?
Well, yeah, it is, and I must say I've enjoyed every minute of it, and it's a great life, and I'm delighted to be living it.
Rod, I have a true confession. Most of what you've written over your career are very serious works, but the very first time I heard of you was when a radio station in New York City played this recording.
I'm a mummy. I scare people. Watch what happens when I walk up to somebody. I'm a mummy.
The artists on the record were Bob McFadden and Dore. And of course, Dore, D-O-R, was R-O-D, spelled backwards. And you were playing a beatnik.
You know, it's very funny because in Europe, the singles that made the charts always my ballads or more introspective things, but in America, my offbeat stuff, which is really offbeat, seems to be the stuff that hit the charts. And the Mummy I remember with great fondness because Bob McFadden was a voice actor that Coral had signed. I was under contract to Northern Music, which is a subsidiary of Decca Records, and Coral was an offshoot of Decca, et cetera, et cetera. And they were trying to plug this new series of movies that they were releasing in conjunction with Hammer, this company in London that did horror movies. I was asked to write a song to promote The Mummy. I thought, how in the hell am I going to write a song about a mummy? And that's what happened.
You wrote the song, and Bob McFadden played the role of the mummy.
I played Dore.
I'm a mummy.
That's cool.
I'm a mummy.
You mean you're a mother?
No, I'm a mummy.
I'm a beatnik.
Aren't you afraid of me? Aren't you gonna scream?
Oh, yeah. Like help.
Now getting quite a bit more serious. Among the many, many songs you've written was the one we sampled a few seconds ago, your version of Seasons in the Sun, and that was kind of a co-write with Jacques Brel. You wrote the English lyrics.
Yes, I adapted it from a Jacques Brel song called The Moribund. Seasons in the Sun was the least likely song I'd ever been involved with to ever be a hit, and I couldn't believe it.
Number one in the United States and a smash all around the world. Here's a little bit of the Terry Jacks version of it.
We had joy, we had fun, we had seasons in the sun. But the wine and the song, like the seasons have all gone. All our lives we had fun, we had seasons in the sun. But the hills that we climbed, just seasons
are... Kind of a coincidence, Rod, because when you think of Bob Crew, you think of Seasons Records. And that was a Seasons record of a different type. You became connected with Bob.
Well, I'd known Bob Crew almost all my songwriting life. When I was living in New York and working for Decca, I met Bob in those days. Many years later, when my books hit very, very big and you couldn't go into a shop without seeing a stack of one of my books, not only in the store, but by the cash register, because for some reason, my poetry had caught on. And because of that newfound fame, I was picked to be a guest on Nancy Sinatra television special. It was one of those things where I had a poem that was very popular called A Cat Named Sloopy. In fact, I just finished liner notes on a CD version of my score for A Boy Named Charlie Brown, and there's a photograph of a drawing that Charlie Schulz did showing Snoopy sitting on top of his doghouse saying, Sloopy? Anyway, they wanted me to do A Cat Named Sloopy on the show.
Right.
And it turns out it was an autobiographical poem, and my cat had been a white cat, and the producer of the show knew Bob Crewe. We were in New York for the filming, and Bob had a white cat. So they sent me over to Bob's house for an afternoon of photographs being taken with this white cat, one of which was blown up and became the entire set for my reading of A Cat Named Sloopy.
Wow.
You can imagine a guy reading a poem on mainstream television, but so it was. And while I was there, I had just finished a score for a film called The Prime of Miss Jean Brodie. And I get excited about my scores and what it is I do. And I was carrying with me a test pressing of the score for the film, and I put it on Bob's phonograph to let him hear it. And the next thing I knew, I didn't have a single out on Gene.
But, as it turned out, someone else soon did.
Oliver, and it was courtesy of Bob Crewe. Bob managed Oliver.
Oliver had just had a big hit single called Good Morning Starshine.
Good Morning Starshine.
Yes, right.
And this was a sequel.
And you wrote Gene all by yourself?
I did. And it was inspired by Maggie Smith's performance, which I saw in the Rushes one day in London. And in the limo, on the way back to my hotel, I wrote the song.
When the sun comes a-singing, I'll still be waiting for Jean, Jean. Roses are red, and all of the leaves have gone green, while the hills are ablaze with the moon's yellow haze. Come into my arms, Bonnie Jean.
It was one of the quickest songs I ever wrote, and it was just because I was really so taken by Maggie Smith's performance.
Rod, do you have some closing thoughts about Bob Crewe?
He was one of the nicest people I ever met, in or out of music. He never forgot a birthday. He could suggest an idea to you. It would wind up as a perfectly formed song or poem or whatever. He was a man who could have been successful in anything he ever tried. And that he was a songwriter, he was a top-notch producer, is to our benefit. He was a guy who met life in a way on the same terms I do. We had that in common. You just go straight ahead, and if an opportunity presents itself, you say, yeah, I can do that. And then you do it. And Bob was like that. So intelligent and such a personable guy, I think of Bob with great fondness. I'm so pleased that you're taking this time to honor Bob. Nobody deserves it more.
I have some girls right now who are musically going to introduce our next participant. We now bring to our microphone a man who was known as Disco Tex on that particular recording, but also is known under a different name as well, Monty Rock III.
It was Monty Rock III when I knew Bob my whole life. I was 18, 19 years old. So we had been with maybe 10 labels trying to find a hit record. Mm-hmm. I was with Ahmet Erdogan, by the way, Artie Ripp. Wes Farrell always felt that we're going to get a hit. Discotex was the collaboration of Bob Crew and an artist, because he knew I was difficult. I'm not an easy artist to produce or direct. I have no discipline. I'm tough. And Bob was able to pawn in the energy. We did that in one take, by the way. Get dancing. In the studio, as he produced this masterpiece, him and Kenny Nolan, he kind of explained to me that this would change my life. In other words, he felt it was really the first rap record in 1973. It was talking. It was energy. It was different. It took 10 months to find where it belonged. It wasn't R&B. Disco wasn't named yet. It wasn't a pop record. It was really the beginning of disco. So at the beginning, Bob Crew, a guy called Mark Simon, Wes Farrell, and the record went to every disco. It began to be that kind of thing, disco. And you must understand, I was at the time a TV star. I was the Tonight Show, Griffin Show. I'd been working very hard. I was already 32 or 33 at the time. So they weren't buying Monty Rock at that time. Monty Rock had been, that's my opinion, by the way, Bob knew that, but I already had been, I was a very difficult artist. It's very hard to convince me the idea was brand new. It's introducing an artist. So it was very difficult for me to let my ego, which was Johnny Carson, I was a singer, don't forget, and I had really become kind of the Lady Gaga of my day, you know, become that kind of performer.
Well, she's the discotheque's Monty Rock of today.
It took a brilliant producer to honestly pawn in on the brilliance of Monty Rock and make it happen.
I interviewed Bob back actually in 2008, and the story he gave me is he had this concept for a discotheque and the Sexolettes, but he didn't know who was going to be discotheque, and he saw you on the Tonight Show. He said, "There is my discotheque." Did he write the dialogue?
No, nothing was written, top of my head.
So most of this record was ad-libbed by you, in other words.
Ad-libbed.
And that was a little bit of the top 10 hit, Get Dancin'. Who were the Sexolettes, by the way?
Anybody that we could afford. Anyway.
All the girls in the studio. Wow.
Studio singers.
What is it that made Bob Crew so special as a producer in terms of how you feel about
friendship? He knew how to be my friend. In spite of myself fighting with him, I met him when I was 18 or 19 years old. He was a friend. He tried for years to help me. I believe that he understood the core of a performer. He knew down deep that there was something for me. Oh, I hope the legacy of him is that he knew how to be a friend, even if I was hard to deal with.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I had that quality of screaming and yelling. I really was a diva before divas were divas, yeah, you know what I mean?
He knew how to rein you in.
He knew. He also knew that it would be difficult to get a performance out of me, and when he got the one shot, that was it.
And now it's my pleasure to bring on a distinguished gentleman. He's a gifted arranger, songwriter, and musician. And he has been awarded over 60 gold and platinum albums. Welcome to the show, Artie Butler.
Oh, hi, how are you?
I'm fine, and how are you, Artie?
I'm fine, Ryan. I'm so happy to be here with you. Sad that it's because of an occasion like this that we meet. I'm happy to be here with you and talk about my dear friend Bob.
Over the course of your career, Artie, you've done a lot of arranging and songwriting and keyboarding.
Keyboarding sounds like snowboarding.
Oh, you do that too?
No. Oh, gosh, no.
Well, you play harpsichord. You play any keyboard instrument, right?
Pretty much. Yeah, well, it's all general.
Kind of a general type of
right,
a thing.
Right.
As a songwriter, you wrote a song called Here's to Life, which became Shirley Horn's signature song.
And it was on the jazz charts for almost a year.
Here's to life. And every joy it brings. So here's to life. To dreamers and their dreams.
Others have recorded it as well.
It was recorded by Barbra Streisand, and it's on its way to becoming a standard.
You co-wrote it with lyricist
Phyllis Molinari, yes.
As an arranger, you've arranged many things. You arranged Laughter in the Rain by Neil Sedaka.
Neil, yes.
You also did Barry Manilow's Copacabana.
I did.
And I'll Never Love This Way Again.
With Dionne Warwick. I know I'll Never Love This Way Again.
Right. And many others. As a musician, you did all the instruments on the Jeanette's record of Sally Go Round.
Sally Go Round the Roses, yeah, except the guitar.
You worked on several Redbird sessions.
On the early Redbird record dates, I played a piano and I arranged a whole bunch of those things. The Shangri-Las and the Jelly Beans and all of those groups.
Dixie Cups.
You know, the leader of the pack.
Now, one of the things that you are famous for is what many people call the coda at the end of a couple of hit records. One of them was Society's Child by Janis Ian.
Well, it could be called a coda, right. Let's call it an ending. It's not officially a coda.
Okay.
But we'll call it the ending. Okay.
That's pretty distinctive, and that was you, right?
Right, absolutely.
All right, now, a few years later, there was a record called Indian Reservation.
Right.
By the Raiders.
Right.
And let's hear the ending of that one. They sound alike. Was that you also?
That was me. Slightly different. What happened was the producer loved the Janis Ian record, and asked if I could do something like it. I said, I'll do it, and I'll just change the ending of the ending. You know, and that's what happened.
Still very similar.
Very similar.
Well, you worked with many people over the years, and one of them was Bob Crewe.
As a musician, I was hired by other arrangers, Charlie Colillo, Herb Bernstein. I played for Denny Rendell, too.
Of course, working with all these people, you also got to know very well Bob Crewe.
He was an encyclopedia of the music business. He knew about records and record people and songs and stuff like that. And on a personal level, he was an encyclopedia of good taste. He had the same good taste in music and good instincts about records. He might not have known the difference between a G7 chord and a tuna fish sandwich. He might not have known, but he had good instincts and good taste. And in his personal life, I went to his home, to Dakota. In your life, you've never seen such an impeccably, beautifully decorated apartment. Unbelievable. And then he had a home here in Los Angeles, in the Hancock Park area. You've never in your life seen anything so magnificently decorated. He had the same taste in music. You can hear it in the records. You can hear it in the ideas that he had musically, and that same awareness of music and good taste he had in his home. In the doorway, entering a room, the molding around that doorway would have a certain hue around it that was in a picture 10 feet away. Subtly, the doorway was lit with a 10-watt, 5-watt bulb, whatever, so that you don't know what you were walking into a not decorated, but you just felt that the artwork was more important. I can't explain it. It wasn't decorated over the top, but he made records the same way. You know what I'm saying? This guy was across the board talented in so many ways.
Dreaming can make you mine. my eyes and feeling fine.
It is my pleasure to welcome a gifted singer-songwriter who likes streaming. What else? Kenny Nolan, how did it come about that you first met Bob Crewe?
It was 1973. I had a meeting with a guy named Ed Sulzer, who ran the Carpenter's publishing company, mm-hmm. Karen and Richard Carpenter, called Hammer and Nails Music. And I had a couple of minor regional hits here and there. And I happened to make a phone call, and he said, let's get together. And I went up to A&M Records, and I played a song that I had written called Idaho. And I had written it for like a share. It was like a Gypsies, Tramps, and Thieves. And he sat and he said, my God, that's a hit. He says, and I know who it's a hit for. And I said, who? He goes, well, he happens to be recording right now downstairs at the studio, Bobby Darin. I said, really? He said, yeah, Bob Crewe is in the studio with Bobby. I didn't know Bob at that point. He said, I'd like to make a copy of this and get it to him. He says, but if I get this to him and Bobby cuts it, I want half of it, 50% of the publishing. So at that point, I said, fine. Anyway, he goes downstairs and he comes back and he said, Crewe loved the song. I guess waiting on Bobby to do something, and maybe 2 weeks after that, he died. So a little bit of time went by, and I said, you know, I got to call Bob Crewe,
yep.
who I never met or talked to. And I got through, and he answered, and very nice. And he said, you know, I bet you have more songs in you. I didn't expect him to say that. He said, why don't you come up? So lo and behold, I go up to see Bob. I sat down at the piano, and I started to play some of my ideas. And he was really taken. And it started there. And we went from that to me bringing a number of songs into the deal, because at the time he was signed to Motown. I brought in a number of songs, and we just started getting to know each other. And one day, late 73, I walked in, and I said, I have a couple of ideas. Do you remember the Rolling Stones tour in like 72, Get Your Ya-Ya's Out?
Oh, of course. Yes, I do. And they also put out an album called Get Your Ya-Ya's Out.
Right. It was all over the sides of buses, Rolling Stones, Get Your Ya-Ya's Out. And I looked at that, and I kept seeing Get Your Ya-Ya's Out. And I'm going myself, you know, their meaning of that was get drunk, get crazy, jump up and down, get high, you know?
Yes.
But I took it in a different way. I said, get your ya-ya. Well, ya-ya, well, you know what that is. That's, we don't have to talk about it. You know what I mean?
Yes, right.
I'd sit there at the piano going, get your ya-ya, get your... And I kept playing that and playing that. One day I went up to Crewe and I played him that idea. And I said, well, who would say this? We talked about it, and then it would be a hooker in downtown New Orleans. Get your ya-ya, da-da. And I sat there playing that down, playing this thing on the piano, and it started to come out more and more and more, and we were working on it. After the verse, I said, Bob, we need some French in this. He goes to get the slang dictionary, and he goes, oh, voulez-vous coucher avec moi ce soir? Do you want to go to bed tonight? And I go running over to the piano, and as God is my witness, without even thinking, the melody and the phrasing came out all at once. Get you, ya, ya, da, da.
Get you, ya, ya, da, da.
That became a number one hit for La Belle in 1975, and then, 26 years later, in 2001, a number one hit again by Christina Aguilera, Lil' Kim, Maya, and Pink. Amazing story. And also amazing was a song that you wrote called Blue Eyes in Georgia.
There was a number of hit records that used Georgia in it. The Nights, the Lights went out in Georgia.
Oh.
Georgia on my mind. Midnight Train to Georgia. I said, you know what, I got to write a song with Georgia in it. And I sat at my piano, and I came up with a song called Blue Eyes in Georgia about me leaving a girl that I loved in Georgia. And it went, Blue Eyes in Georgia, they're the only eyes I ever loved. And towards the end of the song, I was thinking, and I accidentally went, instead of my eyes in Georgia, I went, my eyes adored you. So it went, blue eyes in Georgia, they're the only eyes I ever loved, my eyes adored you. So it became, my eyes adored you, though I never laid a hand on you, and that's how my eyes adored you happened.
My Georgia, oh, I never laid a hand on you, my Georgia. Like a million miles away from me, you couldn't see how I adored you. So close, and yet so far.
A great song and a great performance by Frankie Valli. And you wrote one other big hit that I feel I must mention, I Like Dreamin'. How did that song come about, and did you write it for Kenny Nolan?
No. I had come up with a song. Yeah, I have that certain nothing, I know. It just came to me one night. Actually, it came to me in a dream.
You dreamed about writing a song?
Yes, I dream songs. I could wake myself up in the middle of a dream and say, don't forget it, get up, get up. And I actually do. I had this song in my head, and I woke up, and I went down. I was half asleep. I hold the guitar, and I go, I like dreaming, because dreaming can make you mine. I got up the next morning, and I played it, and I liked it. I like dreaming, because dreaming can make you mine. I like dreaming, closing my eyes and feeling fine when the lights go down, and on and on and on. And it happened.
What do you remember most about Bob Crew?
The greatest mentor. His craziness just permeated creativeness. Give me a little pink over here at the end of the chorus. Give me a little brown over here. He was very, very motivated by colors. One of a kind. They broke the mold.
Now I am pleased to introduce a gentleman with a Belleville connection to Bob Crew. And he expects to be part of a project to honor the great producer, songwriter, singer, artist, and everything else that Bob was. Thanks so much for joining us, Joe Servasio. You actually attended Belleville High School?
I did, and my relationship with Bob is that I also attended PS number 10, the grammar school where he attended as well.
Did you ever meet him?
Never met Bob, but heard a lot about him, particularly through one teacher who was somewhat of a Pied Piper for music and dance in our grammar school, Mrs. Ellen Angus. She spoke so highly of Bob way back when.
What did she say about Bob?
Well, you know, we were little kids. I entered school number 10 in 1952 in kindergarten. Bob had already graduated from Bell High School in 48, so he was a good bunch of years older than me. But as I got into the middle grades, you know, you learn a little bit about girls and music and stuff. The boys were just playing football, still playing tag, baseball, you know, basketball. But this older teacher who had Bob Crew at school number 10 during the war years said, oh, you guys have to be like Bob Crew. He loved music. He could dance. He was so creative and so talented. Oh, you know, who was Bob Crew? Who cared about this guy? Right about that time, old Silhouettes hits the charts, and we're starting to figure out girls. So we thought Bob Crew was the greatest at that point because he had such a role in Silhouettes, that great doo-wop sound of the mid to late 50s there.
Yeah, it was the first one. That was his first major hit. He and Frank Slay actually put that together. They wrote the song and they produced the record by the Rays.
Right.
When did you attend grade school and when did you attend high school?
Yeah, I was at school 10 from 52 to 61. And then I graduated from Belleville High, same school as Bob in 65. He's way ahead of me. Bobby got out in 48, so you do the math.
Right.
He's about a good 16, 17 years older than us. But he was just moving into his prime when we were impressionable kids, late grammar school years, and certainly in high school.
Are you aware that there might be some sort of a wall of recognition in Belleville? Have you heard anything about that?
Well, Ronnie, you know, coincidentally, I was the first inaugural chairman of the Belleville Education Foundation, and my role and my team's role was that whenever the Board of Ed selected the inductees, we would generate the fanfare, if you will, for the gala dinners to honor these guys and gals who had impacted the world after Belleville High. And I have to tell you, When I had heard about the wall before I had taken on the chairmanship, my first nominee was Connie Francis. And, of course, that was a no-brainer for Belleville High to consider her. But then right thereafter, I did all the research on Bob, because I knew about the connection to the Four Seasons before Jersey Boys hit the stage. And I said, hey, if you're going to continue with the fine arts, you have to put Bob Crewe in there. And everybody's saying, who's Bob Crewe? Of course, he's not in there yet. Others have gone in before him for, I'm sure, good reasons. But it's only a matter of time before Bobby gets on the wall.
And that will be so well deserved.
It's been an initiative of the Board of Ed of Belleville, New Jersey for about 10 years now. Belleville students who were actually in the school district, whether or not they graduated or not, but they spent some years in the school district and then went on to impact the world. Not the local political scene or even states activities, but the world, well beyond Belleville and Belleville, New Jersey. And, of course, when Bob gets in, he'll be part of it there with judges and doctors and other entertainers like Connie Francis and Tommy DeVito of the Four Seasons, and Bob will be right up there, God willing.
There's a prestigious website that you might be familiar with called Rare Rockin' Records, and they describe the man I'm about to introduce as elite, outstanding, amazing, and awesome. He's recorded for many different labels, and many of his records are still popular all around the world. His name is Rick Randell.
Hi, Ronnie. It's good to be here.
Incidentally, we have somebody else with the same last name as you, and I assume that he is not related. I'm talking about songwriter Denny Randell.
No, actually, how I got that name? You want my real name?
Sure.
Rocco Gaeta.
G-A-E-T-A?
G-A, yes. And when I signed with this first record company, Arc, they said, there's no way you're going to get this name on the air. So I had to change my name. My mother always used to call me Rick. She didn't like, you know, the ethnic Rocco for a baby.
So what about the Randell part?
We're all trying to come up with a name, you know? It was first Randall, R-E-N-D-L-E. But long story short, that's what we come up with. It used to be Rick and the Randells, and then it was just Rick Randell.
Going to play a short sample of one that you did on MGM Records as Rick Randell, When I Was a Kid.
You teased old Dad by treating me just like a man. Now, head of a man, I stand on the things I did when I was a kid. The things that I did.
Wow, that one really moves. And the backup singers on that one were Peggy Santillia, Bernadette Carroll, and Denise Ferry. And speaking of Denise, you recorded some duets with Denise as Silky and Sage. She was Silky, and you were Sage. And here's one of them.
The day you came my way, it was a happy day. I saw the love light in your eyes. And we would laugh and sing, sharing everything together.
That was a little of Are You Satisfied by Silky and Sage. And Sage, I have to say that you and Denise make beautiful music together.
Greatest singer in the world. This girl is bar none the greatest singer there was and still is.
Now, speaking of greatest, you performed at Palisades Amusement Park, where they had some of the greatest rock and roll shows. One of the rock and rollers that was on that stage was a gentleman named Bob Crewe.
Well, at the time I was with ABC Paramount, so I was doing promotion, as you know.
Yes.
You go out, you do shows. We were out there both, but with different companies, and we were backstage. And if you remember, you hit it on the head. This stage was huge.
Oh, yes.
And the people were in those chairs in front of you. It was like a theater, and there would be people up flying high on these big wires like the Flying Willendas.
Well,
they used to put that type of show, and then they had a DJ come in and announce you. But yeah, him and I just met him and we hit it off. He was a really cool kid.
So you were on the same show with Bob.
We're chirping about all different things, and next to us was Lloyd Price. You wind up meeting a whole bunch of people.
And do you remember what song Bob Crewe was doing?
Poofing and whiffing, poofing and whiffing. Whiffing, poo, poop, poo, pop, pop, whatever it was.
You mean a whiff and poof song.
Sing the whiff and poofs assembled with their glasses raised on high, and the magic of their singing cast a spell.
Which, by the way, we're going to close this presentation with.
Crewe was a cool guy. I was very good friends with the Four Seasons. I'm talking about the Lovers.
Right.
I'm talking about going back with little bands with Tommy just had a trio.
Oh, so you knew them before they became the Four Seasons.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So I would even be around when they started recording.
Uh-huh. Oh, wow.
I've sat in a studio while they're recording, sitting in the engineer booth, and they'd be out there, and they play something, play it back. And so he was sitting next to me, and I was sitting in, like, Tommy DeVito was on one side. I was in the middle, and Crewe was on the other side. I can't be sure what song that it was. You can't say anything about Crewe when you're in the studio. You know, like, hum. What happened is, while the songs were playing, whatever it was, I sang a little something, I thought to myself.
Uh-oh.
And he stopped the whole set. Stop. That's it. I like that.
What?
He said, I like that. We got to put that in. Well, in the meantime, Tommy DeVito's on my opposite side, I would say to my right.
Yes.
He's sticking me with his elbow, grabbing my leg, and pull me over and say, if you say another word, I'll knock you out. You can't say nothing to Crewe. Everything he hears, he wants in. I think it was Frankie, I'm almost positive, that wind up playing Ashtrays one time.
Oh, God.
I mean, literally clicking.
And you were there when he did this?
Yeah. And Coke bottles at another time.
Coke bottles.
Anything Crewe heard, if you fooled around, that's it. I like that.
You were singing, you said you were actually humming or something.
I was humming.
And that, did that go on to a record? That if
you don't know. Are you kidding? They wanted to kill me.
Oh, okay.
Not so much Gordio. Gordio was okay. It's Tommy. Oh. Don't say nothing. You know, you can't say nothing to Crewe.
Well,
stop everything.
That's what
he did. Crewe, he had it. He was great with words, changing things around. He was musically a genius. He was sharp as a tack.
Right now, I am thrilled to introduce the fabulous recording artist who was the top-selling female vocalist of the late 50s and early 60s. She had dozens of charted records, including 3 number ones. Everybody's Somebody's Fool, My Heart Has a Mind of Its Own, and Don't Break the Heart That Loves You. Welcome to our tribute show, the legendary Miss Connie Francis.
Thank you, Ronnie.
Bob Crewe grew up in Belleville, New Jersey.
Bob and Joey Pesci and myself, all from the same hood.
And I want to mention, Connie, so that everybody in the world knows, in October of 2009, there was a Connie Francis gala. They named a street in Belleville after you and unveiled the Connie Francis Theater at Belleville High School. And at the event, the delegates from the Jersey Girl Sing website, which will be carrying this Bob Crewe show, Denise Ferry, Arlene Lanzotti-Ganella, and Peggy Santillia, they sang Lipstick on Your Collar in your honor as part of the ceremonies.
I remember it well. They were great.
And
it was a fantastic weekend, Ronnie.
And you probably also remember that they wrote the Submarine Race Watcher themes and many of the other themes and recorded them as well for Murray the K.
That's right. Very familiar name.
And you were on that big float with them that's on the Jersey Girls Sing website. And Connie, I understand you've been very busy lately writing a book, your life story.
and it's going to be called Among My Souvenirs. Do you have any idea when that book is going to be out?
Well, people have asked me that for 2 years, and all I say is when I'm finished.
When you're finished.
Yeah, it's so long now. I mean, that I have to put out in 3 volumes. Yet no one can carry this book because the agent said to me, Joan of Arc and Margaret Thatcher combined didn't have a life story like yours.
Oh, my goodness.
So it's a really exciting book because it is about the most exciting era. But, you know, it was at the time at the height of American Bandstand and the Ed Sullivan Show and the Copacabana and the Birth of Las Vegas, and it was just the most exciting, frightening and exciting era of our time.
With all the hit singles that you had, is there one that in particular is your favorite?
Well, I think Mama is because it really touched more people around the world than anything I ever did. And I recorded that when I was 20 with the London Symphony Orchestra. Can you imagine?
Della vita non ti lascio mai più.
Connie, I know that you prepared a heartfelt statement that you want to read about Bob Crewe. So I want to say thank you for joining us. And right now, the floor is all yours.
Thank you, Ronnie. Hi, everybody. And this is Connie Francis here to add my name to the thousands like myself who want to voice a very, very sad farewell to an American music treasure, Mr. Bob Crewe, a man who has no apologies to make to the world or to any of those people whose lives he personally enriched. It's just another travesty in our industry that some of Bob's greatest efforts are currently out of print, because more often than not, newer isn't necessarily better. Provided that mankind has the ability to regain some semblance of sanity before we blow ourselves up, I'm certain that until at least the next millennium, the genius-like music of Bob Crewe will remain an integral and ever-present part of all of our lives, and that's what we call immortality. To me, Bob Crewe ranks among the majestic few in our industry. Keep smiling down on us, Bob, because we really need you.
It is my pleasure to introduce a man who is the founding member of the Four Seasons, and in fact, he was on all the hit Four Seasons recordings from the 60s. What a pleasure it is to have on the phone Tommy DeVito. Tommy, thank you so very much for taking a few moments to talk about Bob and also about the Four Seasons.
You're welcome.
When did you first meet Bob Crewe?
I guess in 1956.
There was a group called the Four Lovers back in 1956.
Yeah.
That was your group, right? The Four Lovers?
Right. I spotted it as the variety trio, and then when I added Frankie Valli to it, it became the Variotones, then went on and became the Four Lovers, and then the Four Seasons.
The origin of the name Four Seasons, is it accurate that they were named after the bowling alley?
Yeah, we went to a bowling alley in Union on Route 22, and the name of the bowling alley was the Four Seasons Bowling Alley. So when we came out there, I looked up and I saw the name, and I said, wow, what a great name for a group, you know.
I guess it worked.
Yeah, it worked, yeah.
You actually had more than one record before Sherry, right, as the Four Seasons?
A couple of records. nothing big, you know. They had Bermuda and they had something else. So
Bermuda was a song that I believe had been done by the Bell Sisters, a couple of girls from the early 50s, and later on it was done by Linda Scott. Was Bermuda the single that came right before Sherry?
Yes, I think it was. I don't think there was any song between those two.
Bermuda, she went sailing on a coral sea. Started water, my darling and me.
When you did Sherry, did you in your own mind say, ah, this is the one that's going to break the group? Did you have a special feeling about Sherry?
Yeah, you know what? We rehearsed it at a friend of mine's basement, and we were ready to go into Bob's crew to let him hear it. We sang it over the phone, and he says, don't change anything. I think we have a smash. So we went in there, and he recorded it right away in about 20 minutes, I think he said.
There was something special. You recorded at a studio called Stay Phillips, I believe, in New York City.
Stay Phillips, and it was in the bottom of a hotel.
And one of the things that is so distinctive of the early Four Seasons records, like Sherry and Big Girls Don't Cry and Walk Like a Man, was the stamping. Do you remember that there was a loose board or something in the studio?
Right, there was a loose board where we were recording and where we were standing by the microphone when we started to, you know, start stamping our foot on Walk Like a Man.
Yes.
It sounded great, so Bob says, let's leave it in, man. It sounds great.
And Bob was one of the people that was stamping real loud, I believe.
Yeah, he came out to stamp with us.
One of the unusual recordings that the Four Seasons did, in that it was not one that was written in-house, was the old standard, in fact, the standard that Frank Sinatra, among others, had recorded, called I've Got You Under My Skin.
Yeah, I just love that sixth harmony that we put in, and it just kind of upped it, you know, it was a little bit above the rock and roll. That's what made me like it so much. Where you hear, never win, never win, never win. That was my suggestion. So they took it and it worked. And most of the stuff that Gaudio put in there always worked. So everybody had a little say-so. I was a never win person.
What made Bob Crew so special?
Well, between you and I think that Bob Crew had one of the greatest set of ears in the music business. I mean, he heard something and he said that's a hit, and it was a hit. He just had that mentality about music.
He was also the co-writer of almost all the recordings that the Four Seasons
made. Yeah, a lot of them. But outside of Sherry, he did Big Girls Don't Cry, Walk Like a Man, and all the other ones. His music ability was a big span because he had so much in his mind when he wanted to do something. And he knew what he wanted to do. He didn't know much music, but he knew what the hell he wanted, and he got it, you know.
Dan Crew is back with us right now. And Dan, this special presentation, this tribute to your brother, has been so many things. And at the top of the list, it's been an outpouring of love for who this man was and what he did. And now to end this tribute, before we listen to your brother's
wonderful version of the Whiff and Poof song. The floor is yours now so that you can give us some final thoughts about him.
I think the important thing to remember is Bob was a Renaissance person. He wasn't a one-dimensional human being. He was an incredibly accomplished painter, artist. He was a very professional singer, performer. He had multiple areas of interest. He could decorate his homes and what have you with a great style. So he had all of these quintessential attributes of a visual artist. And from my point of view, he wrote visual songs. I think the things that are so important for people to think about when they listen to Bob Crewe's songs, listen to his lyrics, because he's always painting you a picture, clearly wanting you to see what he sees, and he does this verbally. I think that was his genius. People often ask me what I thought about him as a person, and I will say this, and I've said it many, many times. Even though he was my brother, he was probably the most interesting person I ever met in my life. And I can assure you, I've met a lot of interesting people. But Bob Crewe still goes down in my life the most exciting. He was a joy to be around because he was a phenomenon. He was wonderful to look at and watch him do what I call his thing. He brought magic into a world that sometimes could be really hard, but he was always having a wonderful time doing it. That's what I will miss most of all.
Dan, I am so appreciative that you participated in this tribute.
Well, Ronnie, I'd like to thank you for the wonderful effort you have put into this, and I really appreciate what you've done for my brother. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Dan, and thank you everybody else who participated in this special presentation.
To the tables down at Morris, to the place where Louis dwells, to the dear old Temple Bar we love so well. Sing the Whiff and Poofs assembled with their glasses raised on high, and the magic of their singing cast a spell. Yes, the magic of their singing, of the songs we love so well. Shall I wasting in my morning in the rest? Oh, we will serenade our Louis while life and voice shall last. Then we'll pass and be forgotten with the rest. We're poor little lambs who have lost their way. Singing by, singing by, singing by. Oh, we're little black sheep who have gone astray. Singing by, by, by. Gentlemen, songsters off on a spree. Doomed from here till eternity. Lord, have mercy on such as we. Bah, oh, bah, one more bye. Gentlemen, oh, soldiers off on a spree. Yes, we're doomed from here till eternity. Oh, Lord, you better have mercy on such as me. Singing bye.
Bob Crewe told us,
it was a wonderful, wonderful time